A lot of what we talk about is based on neuro-linguistic programming, and you want to talk about the focus on the linguistic side of things today.
Yeah, I thought it might be interesting. Yeah, we've talked about, well, we talk about all of it, don't we? But the linguistic part is language and how that impacts us. But it's not just verbal language. It could be, and it's anything that conveys a message to somebody else or even to yourself. So it could be body language, it could be gestures, it could be where we move our eyes when we talk. It could be skin colour changes. Could anything like that. Anything that conveys some kind of. It could be pauses in language. Like some people, when they are in a situation that might be unfamiliar, or they're trying to impress, say a job interview, for example.
Yeah,
they might choose their words carefully, and so they might slow down a bit, and you can see that they're kind of picking the words to say the right things. Or it could be just changes in breathing.
The thing about pausing and breathing, actually, I noticed that when I edit something, it's like we record this interview, and if I cut a little bit out and edit it, if I get the pauses wrong, it just feels off.
Yeah,
it changes, like you say, it changes the feeling. Like it makes it feel like someone is struggling with their words or something, and it's just because I edited it badly.
Right.
So I have to watch that really closely.
Yeah. So any of that is the linguistic part of it. It's not just what we say or what we read.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the thing is with when we read things, depends on where the full stops and the commas are, it can be interpreted completely differently. Or if people miss out the quotation mark, it can read completely differently. So all of that falls into the linguistic part.
So what aspect, like linguistic, is still broad?
Well, yeah, that's right. So I thought what we might talk about today is how sometimes the language that we use prevents us from solving a problem. So a couple of examples might be, like, you know, sometimes I see couples or sometimes I see just one person out of the couple and they go, oh, you know, our relationship is really terrible, right? So they talk about relationship as if it's a noun, a thing. So a noun is like, you know, it could be anything basically.
Like a potato.
Like a potato, yeah. So it's kind of similar to saying our potato is terrible, you know, or the stereo is terrible. You can't really do anything about it because it's something that's kind of solid and finished and over and done with.
Yeah.
So when they talk about a relationship as a relationship, it's like they're not in a position to do anything about a relationship. Another one is communication. So, you know, people at work will say, oh, that, you know, there's no communication around here. Well, I may just as well say there's no tomato ketchup around here for all the good it does, because it's not really specific, is it? You can't do anything about communication. But if you turn it back into a verb and say, you know, we're not communicating well around here.
Yeah.
Then it's like, oh, okay, so how are we not communicating well? Or what do we need to improve to communicate well? But when you just talk about communication, so often these words end with ship or shun, like communication, relationship. Another one is, what's another one? Well, value words like trust or loyalty. They're words that you can't put them in a wheelbarrow and wheel them around, you know. Words that have been action words, like verbs, which have been turned into nouns, and they're called nominalizations in NLP terminology.
Okay.
So once something's a nominalization, you can't really do much about it, you know. So people say, oh, you know, our relationship's terrible and, you know, there's no communication. So when you hear that, you're like, oh, okay. So I would turn it back into a verb and say, okay, so what you're saying is you're relating poorly, or you're not relating well, and, you know, so how are you not relating well? What are you doing to not relate well? And how are you not communicating with each other? Or how are you communicating with each other that's not working? So then the person can go, oh, well, we argue. Okay, so I've got more information now, so okay, they're arguing.
Yeah.
Or if they're relating poorly, how are they relating poorly? Well, you know, we tend to I only talk about superficial things. Okay, so I've got more information. They're talking about superficial things rather than perhaps feelings or things that, you know, need to be talked about in more depth. So by turning it back into a verb, it gives us control over it. We can actually do something about it now.
I guess there's a sense of finality about doing it the other way.
Yeah. It's like it's over and done with, cut and dried, that's it. So then, you know, then what that does is when people think like that, then they become stuck. And it's to do with, again, with the language. It's stuck because, as you said, it's like a sense of finality. That's it. It's here it is. It's in a wheelbarrow. That's it. It's finished.
So have
decision's another one.
Yeah.
You know, so decision, oh, I've made a decision. Right, okay, so how are you deciding it now? So you could, a decision that one is over and done with.
Yeah, that implies...
Over and, done with, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, yeah.
But you can also revisit a decision and go, oh, I'm re-deciding.
So have you consciously tried to change your language in your life?
Yeah, I certainly notice when I'm not, because it makes me feel stuck, and then I go, oh, okay, what did I just think? What did I say? What did I think? And then I'll change it and go, okay, so that then returns the power back to me, not necessarily me, but whoever it is, to resolve it. But while I'm thinking about it in a concrete term that it's over and done with and set, then it's immovable and you can't do anything with it.
So is it as simple as that? Now everyone's heard this, they'll be able to go out and change their lives?
Well, it's a start, because then the other thing is then people just say, well, why don't you just ask people why they don't do things? And I go, well, because if we ask why, you know, that question why is very, it's like the worst question you can ask, really, because I don't know why it is. I think it's something to do with growing up where, you know, we're asked why for a lot of things.
Why did you break the window?
Yeah.
Why did you tramp mud inside?
So we become very defensive.
Yeah.
So when, you know, if we say to someone, well, why is your relationship poor?
Yeah, people are like, hold on.
Yeah. Then all that happens is they give you a whole lot of reasons for it being poor, which again is not going to be helpful in resolving the issue.
Well, that probably establishes the stuckness of it, I guess.
Yeah. And so we always... So one place that we do use the word why is when we're talking about people's values, when I'm eliciting people's values, what's important to them in different contexts. So, you know, people have values in life, values in relationships, in relating, values in, you know, career, all kinds of things. And so usually they're, you know, like working with values has become more kind of popular in the last few years. But when I started doing it, nobody really knew much about them at all. And even now, sometimes it's given kind of
lip service.
That's right. And so... If I'm eliciting values from people, I want to know, for example, what's important in a relationship or in relating to each other. So they might say, oh, well, trust is important, love's important. See, love is a nominalisation as well, because it's like there's only a process of loving somebody.
You don't have a lump of love.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
You can't put it in your hand, then it's a nominalisation. Love, they might say, love is important, trust is important, honesty is important, having similar interests is important, right? And so I usually collect about, well, however many they go for. So typically people have 5 to 8 values in any particular context. But some people might have 20, you know, and I go, okay, well, we've got 20 now. But as we go through the process, they usually get, you know, some of the ones might be come together, like they might put trust and honesty together. And for other people, they go, oh, no, trust and honesty is completely separate. So, but those things, again, are nominalisations. You can't slice it up. It's just like it's a lump. But it's like, how would you know that you were trusting? Or how would you know that there was honesty in the relationship? And then they'll tell me what that is. And then the next question is, why is this value important to you? So, again, it's not done in an accusatory way. It's just like, okay, so why is trust important to you? And I might go, Well, because trust is the foundation of how we relate to each other. And you go, okay. And so why is that important that you, you know, you relate to each other well? And then they'll tell me an answer to that one. And then so each question is delving a little bit deeper as to why that particular thing is so important to them, because people often haven't done this for themselves. So they just go, oh, yeah, well, trust is important, or honesty is important, or love. Then the interesting thing, again, with values is two people might have some similar values, like words, the label words, like love, trust, honesty, but they might have completely different meanings for them.
So how can trust be like different?
Well, for some people, trust and honesty might be the same thing. But I'll give you an example of some people that I worked with a few years ago. So they had decided to, well, they hadn't decided, they were thinking about splitting up. And I said, oh, okay, so let's look at the values, right? So I saw them both individually, and at the top of each one's list was passion. Okay, so the top value was passion. And I said, okay. And so then I think the second one was communication, and the third one was trust. And basically, apart from one of the words, they had the same label words. So these are just the words, the key words, the label for whatever the value is, right?
Yeah.
But it's kind of like at the surface, and what you want to do is go deep down and beneath the surface to find out what that means to people. So at the top of the list, they both got passion. So I said to the woman, what does passion mean to you? And she said, oh, it's like a sexual thing. It's like really wanting to be with that person in a sexual kind of a way. And I went, okay. Cool. And then we went on to the others, and then I did her husband's values, and I said, what's the top value? And he had passion as well. And I said, okay, so what does passion mean to you? And he said, well, it's like a spiritual connection.
Right.
So completely different meanings for the same word. And then when I got them together, I said, well, you know, you've got different meanings for this. And he had, I think she had communication down the bottom of the list somewhere, and he had it second. And I said, so this is interesting. I said, so you've got different meanings for the word passion. And the woman said, oh, my God, I didn't know he even thought like that. And he said, well, that's what I mean about communication. Right. So it was kind of like, same words, same label words, but different meaning. And I think I mentioned this before, like a work value of mine is flexibility. So that means, like the other morning, I was on a webinar till 3:45 in the morning, right?
Oh.
Yeah. Because I wanted to do it, and it was in the UK or somewhere, and it was like, that's the time it was, so they weren't going to change it for me. So it's like I wanted to do it. So that meant that I was a bit late getting up the next morning, yeah. Right? So, but that's, to me, that's flexibility. And if I want to come out at, 9 o'clock because it's stopped raining and walk the dog, then I can work before I come out and then come out when the rain stopped, you know. So that's flexibility for me. But you can imagine then if I got a job somewhere and I said to them, oh, do you have flexibility? And they go, oh, yeah, we've got flexibility. And so I do my seminar and I rock up there at 10 o'clock in the morning or something. And they go, you know, what time do you call this? And I go, well, it's 10 o'clock. I thought there was flexibility. Oh, well, you know, we meant you could start at 8 or 8:30.
You're allowed to start earlier. That's what their definition of flexibility is. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's important to check all of these things. So, you know, when people go for jobs, they go, oh, well, you know, flexibility is important. Is a flexibility? And they go, yeah. But they've got a different, completely different interpretation to the word flexibility than you have.
You know, there's a definition / of a value that I've often wondered, that I really don't understand, and it's kind of a, well, it's a thing used in a political sense where conservative politicians would get up and say, I really believe in standards.
Right.
And there's people like, and some people like to hear that, like, yeah, standards are really important.
Yeah.
And
that's another nominalization.
Yeah. And I don't resonate with that. And when I think about it, I don't actually know what that means.
Yeah. I bet nobody else does.
Well, maybe, but I'm hoping you can unpick it because it's a word that it's the kind of thing that's said a lot.
Yeah.
And what is it? Why is it resonating with some people? Like, what's happened? Can you explain that? Do we need to get all those people in the room?
Well, it would be again question. So if somebody said to me, "Oh, you know, we have standards," I would go, "Great, you've got standards. Can you tell them what those are?"
Yeah.
Because how are you going to meet the standards if you don't know what they are? to start with. So it's again, it's a it's another nominalization.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So what's standardized and what does that actually mean? Because, I don't know, for some people it might mean a dress standard, or other people it might mean a language standard. You know, you're not allowed to swear or something. Or for somebody else it might mean, I don't know, I don't know, it could mean anything, couldn't it? Like you say, it's going to mean different things to different people. And if we don't explain it, or we don't ask questions, then we assume that we're on the same page because we're using the same word.
So maybe that's an issue of a politician using a deliberately vague word because it will...
Well, like,
there's a potential for lots of people to like it.
Well,
even if they
politicians
disagree.
Are good at really good at putting people in a trance because you can't follow it because just about every word they use is nominalisation. And so what happens is you just go into a trance and then you come out of the trance when somebody claps at the end and you go, I have no idea what they said.
But we're sure having fun here. Yeah. Well, the crowd is clapping and I better join in.
Yeah, wake up.
Yeah, okay, all right. That's probably not a good example to use.
No,
although it's interesting to unpick a political speak, really.
Yeah.
Or campaign speak, I'd probably call it better.
So looking at some of the words that they use, they're very good at... You know, because what happens is if I say, you know, when you think about your relationship now, I wonder how it's different from how it was 3 months ago, then people go, like this, and it's kind of like they've got to make sense of it. And in the making sense of it, it puts you in a trance.
Because your brain's busy.
Because your brain's busy trying to figure out what the hell it means.
Right.
So if they talk in those ways, then people go into a trance. And then, because they're trying to make sense of it in the head.
Right, so it's the opposite of communication. In a lot of ways.
It's the opposite of communicating.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Good point.
Because it's kind of like... So vague, you can't make sense of it. So they call it hypnotic language because it's so kind of what's the word? I'd use the word chunked up, but that's a bit of an NLP term. It's so vague that you can't make any sense out of it. And then what an interviewer should do, but they usually crap at it, pardon my French, is they should. So if they say, well, you know, we're going to do blah, 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 then I'd be asking, so how are you going to do blah, blah, blah? How specifically are you going to do that? But the interviewers don't seem to ask those questions. You know, they just go, oh, yeah, okay, because they're in a trance as well probably and move on to the next thing.
Their priority is not communication either.
No.
Most commercial journalists, their priority, especially the more you get to TV where it's celebrity-driven, it's their career and about getting a gotcha moment or just the fact that they're talking to the Prime Minister, so that puts them in a much shows that they're important. Like those are all the values that are happening there.
Yeah.
And communicating is not something that they're actually trying to do that well.
Right. So then the politicians get away with it and nobody's any the wiser.
Like I couldn't interview. Like I remember hearing John Key interviewed on national radio when he was Prime Minister, and I was like, if that was me doing the interview, I just would have told him, either talk clearly or I'm hanging up.
Yeah.
Because it's like, because nothing has been gained.
Right, exactly,
The interviewer was getting, like, he was trying to be aggressive to kind of shock John Key into saying what he really thought, but John Key's way smoother than that.
Right.
Like, that wasn't going to work.
So you have to learn questioning techniques, which is another NLP thing. So.
Well, this was, who was the... I can't remember. Guy Espiner? Was that? He's actually
Guy Espiner.
Is that his name?
Yeah, Guy Espiner.
I mean, he's a reasonably good journalist.
Mm.
But he just... Oh, John Key was a very sophisticated person.
Mm.
And he just wasn't getting anywhere.
Mm.
And unfortunately, to be an important interviewer, you have to interview important people. And so he couldn't just cut John Key off. But that's what if any reasonable person would... If you had sat down for a coffee at a cafe with someone and they talked to you like John Key was doing in that interview, or most politicians do, you'd just get up and leave.
Mm.
You know, you wouldn't stand for it for a minute.
Right.
Yeah.
So then it's really about being able to ask questions that get beyond that surface vague language into really specific language. And in NLP we use a thing called the meta model. The meta model, meta means above or beyond, and so the meta model is a set of questioning techniques that get beyond the surface. So, you know, if somebody said, oh, our relationship is poor, the question would be, how are you relating poorly? So then I'm going to get more specific information, like, oh, well, we argue. Okay, what do you argue about? How do you argue?
Yeah.
How often do you argue? So each question then is getting you deeper into what the real problem is, rather than staying at that superficial level and saying, oh, well, why is your relationship poorly? Well, because blah, blah, blah. And then you're going to get all this backup of why they think it's that way, which doesn't get you any further to resolving the issue. It just gets more backup information to back up their claim that they're relating, that they have a bad relationship or a terrible relationship.
It's also taking people to the place where they're in that bad state.
Exactly.
It's very hard to find your way out at that point in time.
Whereas if you say, how are you relating poorly, then they've got to think about it a bit more. Oh, well, how are we relating poorly? Well, that's a good point. Well, we don't really talk to each other, okay? Yeah. So there's actually no communicating at all going on, that situation. So each of those questions, and other questions like, cause and effect. So what people say, something causes something else, like when he talks to me, he makes me feel like I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like, okay, so what is he saying to you that makes you choose to feel like an idiot?
Choose.
Yeah, because we choose our thoughts. Otherwise, it's like everybody can just push our buttons or pull our strings and we just react accordingly. So when you insert the word choose, and you do it with care and attention.
Yeah, I was going to say, otherwise,
reflective listening as well, because
you might get a trigger happening there.
Yeah, then it's like, oh, and then the person goes, how am I choosing that, you know? Or how am I allowing that to happen?
Yeah.
So the question, there's about 12 or 13 questions that basically dig beyond the surface. So if we think about an iceberg, you know, it's just gotten off track slightly, we know that the bit that sticks out above the water is nothing compared to what's underneath the water that's holding it all in place. So that bit above the water is like the language that people use.
Yeah.
And when we ask these questions, we get into all the bits that are underneath the water.
Yeah.
Which is where the problem really is. So, and then once the person themselves gets to those depths, if you like, of the issue, then they get some insights into how they can resolve it. It's not up to me to resolve it. My job is to facilitate them getting in touch with their resources so they can solve it. Because at some level we do know how to resolve things, but sometimes we just need some facilitation or to a way of thinking that's slightly different. You can't resolve things from the same level of thinking as the problem is. You have to think, even Einstein said that, you've got to resolve it from a different level.
Yeah.
So, you know, part of NLP is helping people look at it from a different perspective, looking at it from a different level at which they've created the issue so they can resolve it.
Yeah. Hey, folks, we're talking to Stephanie Filt with Inside Your Mind and the linguistics part of neuro-linguistic programming, that NLP is something we talk about quite a bit. Do you see in lots of other parts of our lives, we've just mentioned talking about relationship, but lots of other parts of our culture where the linguistics is that we use, that the language we're using is not up to the task?
No, absolutely. See, the other thing is that we, it's kind of like, let's say, well, you and I are having an experience now of being in the studio and having an interview, right?
Yeah.
So now, let's say I go home and I want to tell somebody about the interview. Well, I'm not going to spend however long the interview is telling them about the interview. I might spend 5 minutes of it. So in spending 5 minutes telling them about an interview that might have lasted 45 minutes, I've missed a lot out.
Yeah.
Right? And that's just the things that I can put into words that I can tell somebody about. And then after I've done that, then it's up to them to interpret what I've said as to what the interview is about. So then, you know, that 5 minutes that I spend telling them about the interview might be reduced to, you know, a minute in their mind, And then let's say they want to tell somebody else about that, then yeah. they might spend 20 seconds telling somebody else about my 45 minutes interview. Or they might spend 45 minutes, but they've made most of it up because I only told them 5 minutes,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And then what they actually understand of what I've said is going to be really small again. They reckon that we delete about 98% of information. So when I'm saying things to you, you're making images, you know, you're perhaps talking to yourself about it, you have feelings about it, and then you say that to somebody else, but they might not have the same thoughts, feelings, talking to themselves in the same way. So it's like Chinese whispers. It starts with one person, but by the time it gets to the fifth person, it might be a completely different conversation altogether.
So we should be more sceptical about any information we get?
Well, I always say to people, do some research yourself. You know, don't believe what I say. Go and find out for yourself or test it out for yourself. Test it out with, you know, like talking about relationship or communication. I mean, communication is a good one. People say, oh, there's no communication in this organisation. It's like, well, and the organisation's like a university which is built on communication, right? So it's like that's a big kind of overarching statement, isn't it? But that doesn't tell me about what's happening in the whole organisation. That's one person's point of view. But it's like if I say, well, how are they not communicating in a way that you'd like? Then it's like, well, they don't tell us what's going on. Okay, so now I've got more specific information. Okay, so what specifically are they not telling you?
Yeah.
So we can get, you know, we can drill down on it to get more information. But, of course, you don't want to be doing this in polite conversation when you're just talking about the weather. Because it drives people nuts.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah.
You know, there's a potential to drive people nuts. So if somebody says, oh, you know, the weather's nice today, and you go, well, how specifically is the weather nice today? You know,
yeah.
And we're like, well, there's a nutcase here, right? So it's kind of like I always say to people, well, you know, if you're going to help somebody, you have to be hired first. You know, they have to say, I'd like some help.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Or you could say, you know, I might be able to help you. Would you like me to help? And a lot of people don't because they're just passing the time of day. If people come to see me as a client, I take it as read that they do want some help because otherwise they wouldn't have come to see me as a client. So that's pretty obvious, you know.
Most of the time, at any given moment, most people don't want problems to be solved.
No, some people just like moaning about them.
Well, there's that as well.
Or it's not the time and place to solve it. Or they keep thinking about the problem, but they haven't got any new way of thinking about it. So sometimes what NLP does is help them think about it in a different way, like by asking a question, you know, like, yeah. how are you not communicating? And then because what people do is our thinking is, most of it is the same as we thought yesterday, 95% of it. So if there's no new thought or a way of helping people to think in a different way, then there won't be a resolution and the person will just reinforce for themselves that this is a bad situation. You know, we're not communicating.
Yeah.
Or there's no communication, or our relationship is bad, and they just keep telling themselves the same thing, and then it gets worse because that's how they perceive things then. They've created a program that means that that's how they perceive the relationship or how they're relating to each other. So it kind of goes round and round.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Just like your eyes were doing.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I know. I was thinking, how do I find a question out of this, like, unvirtuous circle?
Yeah, it is an unvirtuous circle. But that is what happens. And people then become more kind of set in their ways, set in their thinking.
People often find it like a trip away, a holiday, a break or something, is a good time to, it's a chance to reflect, a chance to have new thoughts or...
Yeah, and sometimes meet new people as well that have got different ways of thinking.
Mm.
You know, if you've got the same people around you all the time and they think negatively, shall we say, then you're not going to learn a new way of thinking. And when we go on holiday, often we're more relaxed and more open to seeing things from a different point of view because we've got more time.
Yeah.
And then if we meet new people on holiday, you know, we've got no preconceived ideas about those people. We're more likely to listen to them than the people that we see every day.
Hmm. It's all very complicated, Stephanie.
Yeah, it's not straightforward. That's the thing is, if it was, then, you know, everybody would be living the best life. Nobody would ever have any problems. And if they did, they'd be able to sort them out instantly, you know, and move on. But yeah, life is complicated. It's not straightforward all the time.
Well, so instead of this is kind of funny. Instead of paying you to teach them how to catch their thinking where they've been using, what did you call it?
Nominalisation.
What can people take away? What can they remember to do differently?
Well, probably keeping an ear open for those type of words that they might use for themselves. I mean, there's an article on the website. What's it called again? We were looking at it before. It's called How to Resolve a Problem Smoothly by Changing a Noun. But if you just go to the website, which is insideyourmind.com, and just put in the search bar there, just put in verbs,
yeah,
and it'll come up, because I was trying to find it before. So I thought, oh, that'd be a good thing to talk about. So just go to the website, insideyourmind.com, and put in verbs, and it'll come up, and it's a little girl. She's writing solution.
That's the picture, yeah.
Yeah, the picture.
Yeah.
And so the examples are in there. So sometimes when people hear it, it's not as – so some people have a preference for taking in things visually.
Yeah.
And so when they're just listening on the radio, it's not as easy for them to put it in a way that they can understand it as if they were seeing it.
Yeah.
And then other people are more auditory, like disc jockeys and people like that. So
hopefully.
So for them, auditory is good. And then so being able to see what we've talked about can be useful as well. And when I'm teaching this meta model, these questioning techniques, I do it visually and auditorily because a lot of people want to see what somebody might say because it's hard for them to pick it up when they're just talking.
Yeah,
but when they see it written down, it's much easier. They can go, "Oh yeah, there's that word. Oh, there's that word."
You visualize the word. I mean, I know you think I'm an audio learner, but I'm visual.
Yeah, auditory, yeah.
Auditory, yeah. Like, if I can visualize the word, it helps me to remember.
That's
it.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. I usually do that with people's names. If they have an unusual name, I'll go, "Oh, could you spell it for me?" And then I make a picture of the word.
We could do a whole show on remembering people's names, couldn't we?
Yeah, there's lots of ways people remember. But as I say, if it's an unusual name for me, I always ask them to spell it because and then I make it I visualise it in my mind how it's spelt and then I can remember the name. But if I don't get the name right, I just struggle with it because I can't like your name's Aaron, but I know somebody that's been on one of my courses and he spells his name Arron.
Yeah, that's just wrong.
When he sees his mother thought that the way you spell yours was wrong, and so she spelt it the way she thought it should be spelt, which is Arron.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess the summary is communicating instead of communication.
Yeah.
And other words.
Yeah, so as I say, often they end in shin or ship.
Yeah.
So communication, relationship. Or their value words. So trust, honesty, love, whatever else you can think of, flexibility.
And the feeling that goes with it is the feeling of stop or being stuck or...
Yeah, if it's a problem for you, yeah, then the feeling associated with it will be stuck, like how do we improve our relationship? Well, you can't improve your relationship because what relating is a process. So, like, yeah. You and I are relating to each other at the moment and relating, hopefully, to the audience, right? You guys out there.
Yeah.
When we turn it into a relationship, then it's like it's just stopped all of a sudden.
Yeah, static.
Static. So we move it back into something that's movable and moving because then we can do something about it, like deciding or decision. I made a decision. It's like I've made a decision now. There's no change in my mind, right?
But we do that. Like,
yeah,
we do.
We do.
The point of deciding is to get to a decision.
Yeah.
But that is the point of...
And it may not be an issue, but in another context it might be. Well, right. I made a decision now, so it's too late. Okay. And it may be too late
as well.
That.
I don't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy you saying that.
Didn't you?
No, it was because like you made up your mind and now I can't do anything.
Right.
And I
right.
don't even know what you're talking about. You're not even talking about anything real.
Right, exactly.
It's just the phrase.
Yeah. And so if you say, well, how are you deciding that now? I mean, some decisions have to be made on a certain time and a certain date and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, it might be a legal thing that it's not usable. Yeah. But if it's like, shall we go out on Friday? Well, it's like, no, I've made a decision. I'm not going out on Friday. Well, it's only Monday, so how are you deciding that now?
We're starting to get into territory where we talk about why some people just need a decision to be made, any decision, and they feel better once it's made.
And that's right, yeah. And then other people, you know, they feel much better when they haven't made a decision. That's a whole new topic as well.
Yeah. Yeah, the younger generation's like that because they've all got their cell phones with them and they're all communicating and they don't make a decision about what they're doing till they see what everyone else is doing. Yeah. And, of course, they're all waiting to see what everyone else is doing, so everything happens just at the last minute. So you have to be connected to know at the given moment what's happening.
It's interesting. It's called options pattern.
Okay.
So an option, so people... You go, do you want to come to a barbecue on Saturday? And they go, oh, yeah, well, can I let you know? And you go, okay. And it's kind of like, well, is something else might come up, something better might come up. Is that why they're saying they don't want to come? And then other people, you know, they are like procedures. So they'll say, okay, well, why don't we meet at 5 o'clock on Friday? And then they go, oh, yeah, okay. And it's like, done. And it's in the diary and it's all ready to go. That's done.
Yeah.
So some people are a lot more comfortable when it's done and dusted and they know exactly where they are. And other people are like really uncomfortable with that. What they like is an open-ended thing that they can decide at the last minute.
Mm.
Which is when the two get together, you can imagine that causes problems again. Just another problem to resolve.
Yeah. They can visit you to talk about that.
Yeah.
So is this thing about changing a noun, going from relationship to relating or communication to communicating, do you teach that in the NLP course?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's one of the metamodel patterns is when people are using nominalizations to turn it, if you can turn it back into a verb, it gives them power over it again.
Yeah.
Whereas they feel powerless when it's a nominalization, when it's a ship or a shun.
And do you think? And who was the guy who started NLP?
It's two. There's Richard Bandler and John Grinder.
Yeah. And do you think they could interview an experienced politician and keep it on track? Like I was talking about that earlier.
Look, I could do it honestly. I get so annoyed when I see people watching. Yeah, interviewing politicians. I want to push them out the way. Why don't you ask them this? You can ask them that question.
But are they a special case and we shouldn't really try to solve that one?
No, I just think the standard of interview. You're a good interviewer, but the standard of interviewing on television is awful.
Yeah.
I just get really frustrated because it's like I would ask them much different questions to get to the bottom of things.
They might
not be wanting to get to the bottom of things. You know, they might have
They want to keep ratings up.
Yeah.
And that's a slightly different thing.
Yeah.
And the two things might coincide.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
Yeah, but that's just a coincidence, really. Yeah. And so that, I think I'm not going to try and solve that one.
Because they might look bad if they try and answer them if it's a politician. And the other thing too is they're there to just make the politicians look good.
The interviewer, they're there to make themselves look good.
Oh, well, they might have to make the politician look good in order to make themselves look good. I mean, I don't know because I'm not there, but I know that I wouldn't interview them like that.
It's like the interviewer is supposed to elicit information, and politicians are very much needing to keep control of information and preferably not give any at all.
Yeah.
So inviting a politician to an interview, that's your first mistake.
Right.
You've just invited someone to an event where you're trying to spread information and give insight. You've just invited someone whose goal is the opposite.
So
first mistake. Yeah. Anyway, like I said, we're not going to solve that one now. So we'll just mention insideyourmind.com, the article that Stephanie based this interview on. or this chat on is on there called How to Resolve a Problem Smoothly by Changing a Noun.
Yeah.
And have you got any courses coming up? You just did one last time we talked.
I've got one in a couple of or 3 weeks, which is, but it's already filled. It's the last block of practitioner training.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I'm thinking I might, depending on what happens with the plague, whether I'll do another one-day one, Inside Your Mind one.
Yeah.
Another one-day course.
Yes.
I haven't run it for a couple of years now.
Oh, that long,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So we'll see. Or I might do, I don't know, I might do a webinar or something.
Okay. Yeah. All right, Stephanie, thanks for coming in.